So actually, we were discussing Kankavisana Sutta as a theme for this mindfulness for young adult session, and we have come a long way now. Actually, around 27 verses we have discussed, 26 verses actually we have discussed, and today we hope to discuss the 27th one, that is the 64th verse in the Suttanipata. And as I told you, Suttanipata is one of the very famous texts in the early Buddhist teaching, which has very profound suttas like Mangala Sutta, Ratana Sutta, Karaniyametta Sutta, Kaggavisana Sutta. So likewise, very popular and quite interesting suttas are accumulated in this Suttanipata. And Kaggavisana Sutta, or Rhinoceros Horn Sutta, is one of the very interesting suttas. So as we know that all the verses are attributed to Pachyeka Buddhas. So we know that there are three levels of attainment or the fully enlightenment. One is the Sammasambuddha, like Gautama Buddha, who has self-enlightened and preach Dhamma to others, so that others also can understand the teaching. And the Sangha members or Sangha order was established. And on the other hand, Pachyeka Buddhas are different, that they also self-enlighten, but they are not into much of teaching. So therefore, there is no Sangha order that they establish. Rather, they are self-enlightened and they are keeping quite silent. And on the other hand, there are Arahants, so who has followed the teaching of Sammasambuddha, and then they become enlightened. So these are the typical three fully enlightened beings that we can understand through the Dhamma. And as I mentioned, all these verses are attributed to the Pachyeka Buddhas who are self-enlightened, but they are not much into the teaching or teaching others, but they are more concerned about the secluded practice. So therefore, throughout the session or throughout the sutta, this secluded practice or isolated type of practice is quite solitude is actually quite highlighted. That is the emphasis given in all the verses. So there is a repetitive phrase available in each verse, Eko chare kaggavisana kappo. So that indicates that every Pachyeka Buddha has highlighted that word. There are so many other things to do, but they are highlighting, they are emphasizing this secluded practice. Now today also actually some similar thing is available. There was one king called Chatumasika Brahmadatta. So Chatumasika means 4 months. Chatu is four, Masika means months. So this Chatumasika Brahmadatta, the term has referred to him because once in 4 months he is going to the garden and used to play in the garden. So he may have kind of a royal garden. So he is going to that royal garden in each 4 months, and then he is used to play something. Now, while he is enjoying there, and he has noticed a particular type of a tree, and it is mentioned in Pali as Parichattika Kovilara tree. I don't know exactly what it is, but some sort of a tree which has some beautiful flowers. So it's a huge tree, but with beautiful flowers. So as this king one day entering the garden, he has noticed this tree, and he found these flowers are very beautiful. The whole tree is filled with so many flowers, and the king is approaching the garden with his full army. And he actually has noticed this very beautiful tree, and he actually has picked a flower. And now with that flower, he is going in. Now the second person who is following this king, he also felt, okay, this king has plucked a flower. Let me also pluck a flower. So he too plucked a flower. Then the next person also thinking the same. This tree is very beautiful, and king and the next person, the say prime minister, he also has plucked the flowers. So let me also do it. So he also quite satisfied or sort of happy about seeing this very beautiful tree. And he too felt that I better pluck a flower. So he too plucked a flower. Then the other person. So likewise, so many people, it's a huge army accompanying the king. So as they are entering the garden, kind of a park, so they actually started again and again plucking the flowers. Now, ultimately, all the flowers were run off. Now, there are still some more people to come in. Now, they thought, okay, all the others have plucked the flowers, but now there are no more flowers available, but I also can't go empty-handed, and this is a huge tree. I also should get something. So they started to use pluck kind of a leaf. Now he is continuing with leaf. Now the other person also plucked a leaf. Another person also a leaf. So likewise, the whole army now say plucking say leaves, and the whole tree now ran out of leaves even. Now no flower and no leaves at all. Now the empty kind of a tree. Now everybody has gone in, and during the end of the day, now king is returning back to the palace. But now he noticed the tree that while when he was entering the garden, he saw a very beautiful tree filled with so many beautiful flowers and filled with so many leaves, and it is so fantastic. But now everything has gone. He himself has plucked a flower, but he didn't think that the others have done that. But others also have done the same thing. Now he was thinking, now this is something to reflect. Now, as we discuss on a certain other day, now when something is beautiful, it is not that only we appreciate that. It is not that only we admire that. It is not that only we desire that. There are so many others also desiring that. So it is not that only the king desired the tree or appreciated the tree, but all the others also appreciated the tree. They also liked it. And since king has plucked a flower, the others also started to do that. When there are no flowers, then they started to pluck even the leaves. So now king understood the whole story, and this is kind of an eye-opening situation for him. Because he understood, okay, this is the situation when something is lovable to everyone. Now, there was another tree next to this particular tree, but it is not with any flower at all. So therefore, that particular tree is not that attractive. So that is simply a huge tree, but it is not so attractive. So therefore, King didn't feel that he has to do anything. The others also didn't feel that they have to do anything. So therefore, this tree was fairly protected. No one paid enough attention to that because there is nothing much attractive there. But on the other hand, this particular tree, that very beautiful, filled with flowers, filled with full elegance, and this mighty. So everybody loved that, everybody liked that. King also liked it, so he plucked a flower. The others also followed him. The others also followed him. So likewise, the whole tree has almost destroyed. Now, king actually has used this incident for kind of a contemplation. So that is the most important thing. So when someone's mind is attuned towards renunciation, when someone is quite thoughtful onto the level of renunciation, so he has so many say incidents. So it is some daily activities or some typical incidents happening in their life, but they are using those as kind of an insightful situation. Now here also same thing happened. King is comparing these two trees. One tree is actually very powerful, very beautiful, filled with lot of flowers, and ultimately it has to undergo a very tragic situation because everybody want it, everybody liked it, everybody appreciated it. But on the other hand, there's another tree. It is also a mighty tree, but not attractive. Therefore, it was safe. Now, when the king was comparing like this, he is now comparing this situation to the typical kingdom and the monkhood. Now, being a king and administering a kind of a kingdom is something that everybody wants to do. Now, that is why every day in every country, there are many politicians, there are many leaders that they want to become the president, they want to become the king. Because everybody wants it, everybody wants the kingdom, everybody wants the country, everybody wants the power, everybody want to become the head of the state. So this is the nature, everybody wants that. So something like this king has done to this flower. So it was a beautiful flower tree filled with so much of things, and so everybody loved it, everybody wanted it, it is so attractive. So the king was thinking, so this kingdom which I am handling right now is also something like this. Sometimes there may be certain people who want to even fight with me in order to get this kingdom, because everybody want it, everybody is going after this kind of luxuries, this kind of wealth. So this is how now thinking by the king, that these are, in a way we can say, kind of mundane type of desires that everybody is going through, sort of become slaves to, and therefore everybody is going after different types of these sensual desires, sensual, say, pleasures. So king also do the same thing, and now he is anyway looking at it differently because of the incident what has happened. Now he is comparing this full-fledged tree with his kingdom, and he is thinking, okay, my kingdom is also something like this. If I am expelled, then the others may even loot the kingdom. They may start to gather all the resources, whatever the precious, whatever the wealthy, whatever valuable. Because there are so many valuable things, so many wealthy people here, and everybody like it. Everybody want it. Everybody want to have the kingdom. So this is the nature. But on the other hand, if we consider the monkhood, something different. There is nothing there. There is nothing attractive. Simply the three robes and the ball. So that is the minimum that Buddha is asking to use. And there are no many people are attracted to that kind of a life, because it is in a way feeling like not attractive. It is not attractive to the level of that the layperson's life, because layperson's life is a beautiful life, maybe with a beautiful car, maybe with a beautiful hairstyle, maybe wearing very beautiful clothes, and maybe wearing a expensive watch, and maybe wearing a bracelet, maybe wearing a couple of rings, and have so many say the clothes, very beautiful expensive clothes, and maintaining a rich bank account, and maybe having a wife, a husband, children, many properties, a car, this and that. So that is the wealthy, everybody wanting, everybody attracted, everybody desiring lay life that king also is enjoying. Now this is what king was thinking. Then how about leaving everything aside and to become a monk? So this is how the king was thinking, because he has seen what has happened to the tree which is filled with so many flowers and fruits and all those things, but ultimately it has to undergo very difficult situation, because everybody wants them, everybody attacked it. But on the other hand, there's another tree, it is not that attractive, so nobody actually want to be with it. Nobody is interested about that tree. So the king was thinking this monkhood is also like that. The monk is using a very minimal kind of resources, and people are not attracted in that sense. There is nothing wealthy with him to loot, to steal. So therefore that is in the typical traditional say quite proper type of monkhood. It's a very frugal kind of a monkhood. So therefore, much people are, or many people are not attracted towards that. Actually, they reject it. It is not something that the whole society is appreciating. Now, of course, there are monks who are quite wealthy and they also have so many things, so many possessions, so many, I don't know, there are maybe many vehicles. So that's a different story. That is a decline of the sasana. But the typical monkhood is something that they are being with the very essential items, not maintaining much of possessions. It's a very simple life. Now, in this line, this king was thinking, and then he left the palace, the kingdom, and he became a monk, and then he started practicing Dhamma, and he was able to attain Paccheka Buddhahood. Now, after he attained Paccheka Buddhahood, he has preached this verse explaining what has happened to him. So he is mentioning, Oharayitva Gihi Byanjanani Sanchanna Patto Yatha Parichattu Kasaya Vatto Abhinikkamitva Eko Chare Kagga Visana Kappu. Having cast off the marks of a layman, like a parichattaka tree that has shed its leaves, clothed in ochre robes, having renounced, one should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. So in a way, this is something that the king was thinking, and someone who is willing to renunciate was thinking, and this is what has happened to this king, and ultimately he became a Paccheka Buddha. And as a kind of a joy in his enlightenment, as a kind of an exclamation about his enlightenment, he is uttering this verse. And this is the sort of the situation that sometimes people are going through. Actually, they may have so much of resources, so much of wealth, but it is not only that they are desiring it. There are so many others also desiring it. So that is why people are stealing the things, because they also want them. If you are not having enough security in your house, then the thieves may come and steal the things, because they also want it, not only you. Everybody desiring these things. So that is the situation explaining in this verse. So these are in a way something to think of. So we of course want certain essential things, otherwise we can't maintain the life. But on the other hand, when we are accumulate so many things, we are sort of burdened with these things, because we have to protect them, we have to sort of safeguard them, and we have to take care of them, we have to maintain them, etc., etc. So much of burden is there. But on the other hand, if one has very few essential things, then only those items they have to look after, then at least we can say to some extent he can have a peace of mind. But if a person has so many things, so much of wealth, so much of properties, and then many others are also looking up, sort of greedy of that, and now it can even cause two different kind of conflicts, fights, and etc., etc. So this is something that represented in this verse. So it is understandable, so I am not going too much into detail. So this is what has happened to this Paccheka Buddha. So he has realized the difference between these two lives. The typical lay life, which is going after so much of wealth and accumulating wealth and possessing wealth, which is desired by everybody. And the other hand, kind of a monk life, which is not desired by many, but kind of a frugal, simple type of life. And that is therefore the Paccheka Buddha is telling is some kind of a refuge is there, some sort of a renunciation is there. So that is what he has done, and that is what he is in a way preaching in this verse. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to go for the question and answer session.
I'm sorry, Bhante. There's currently four questions. Question number one, it's mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, this is regarding my sitting meditation, which is mindfulness on breathing. After 10 to 15 minutes of observing the breath, noting various sensations, the breath starts to fade away and becomes very subtle. Most of the time, the breath vanishes completely, and I perceive a very spacious space afterwards. As per your advice, I try to stay longer and effortlessly in this space. I can observe some sensations at the periphery of this space, for example, sounds, but I don't give much attention to them. However, now I start to observe the breath again in this space at a distance from me. This breath seems not the same gross breath I have observed during the start of the practice. I tried to focus on it and found that it faded away very quickly. I don't know if I should be giving attention to this reappearing breath or ignore it as other sensations. My mindfulness seems intact while in the space. Is there any specific reason that the breath appears again after fading away, Bhante? Much merits for your valuable service. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, breath can reappear, so it can happen. It is typical. Because when our mindfulness is sharpened, even the subtle breath might be noticeable. So there's nothing to worry. So at the beginning, sometimes our mindfulness is not sharp enough to recognize the breath. So at that time also, we feel that breath has disappeared. But as our mindfulness further improves, sharpen, then it is possible to recognize that very subtle breath as well. Therefore, disappearing and again reappearing, again disappearing, again reappearing. So these are very typical experiences that one may go through. On the other hand, while you are watching it, if you can recognize how vulnerable it is, how inconstant it is, so that is actually helping to improve our insights to understanding. So that is what is most important. So therefore, you can, even when breath disappears, you can pay kind of attention to that and see whether it is reappearing. If not, you can sort of consider the overall body and see whether there are any other phenomena which you can observe. And there you pay your attention to those various phenomena, and then you are trying to understand how they are behaving. So that actually helps to understand the behavior of those objects. And using which that you are developing certain amount of insights. So that is important. So therefore, breath is just a one phenomena, and using which you are developing mindfulness and concentration. And after that it has disappeared, you can see whether there are something else that you can use to further observe. And using that observation also, you are now further developing your understanding. So once that also fully disappeared, and that also can happen actually. Now breath disappeared, but now you are observing something else as well. And at the same time, those also can disappear. Then there may not be even anything to look at. Then you can keep your mind empty. So that is another situation that we might come across. So you can sort of be ready to that even, be prepared to that even. And these things also can happen. Therefore, be prepared and proceed to your meditation. Yeah.
Question number two. This is mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Bhante, my sitting and walking practice is progressing well, and thank you so much for this valuable program, which we have been benefiting every Sunday for more than a year. After the Sunday start, I can easily continue during the week as well, alternating walking and sitting whenever I can find some time. Nowadays, as per Bhante's advice, I am trying to be mindful on how my mind works during day-to-day activities. It was not that bad when I'm doing activities alone, for example, brushing teeth, walking, having a shower, etc. But it was a disaster while dealing with family, friends, and office initially. As per Bhante's advice, I put aside my initial worries of seeing how bad my mind is, which goes and grabs things, how easily it can become restless and agitated, etc. I could see rivers of lust, anger, aversion, envy, ego, etc. gushing in if there is the slightest chance. Even the love for my family, attachment to Sri Lanka, career ambitions, and all the positives feel like a burden and stress centered around my ego and self. As I've written to Bhante earlier, most of the time it is a failure when I try to be mindful and guard my mind around habits and strong emotions. However, recently I noted that after 1,000 attempts, there is one or two occasions that the mind did not grasp naturally. All other times I had to use some technique, like focusing on the body or diverting forcefully. When the mind jumps to grasp something unusual, for example, a lustful sight or a thought, I see it clearly due to mindfulness, and it looks like it does not stick, even the attention is on the lustful sight or thought. I don't have put effort to divert from it. This happens after many failures, but there and thought of highlighting. Once it happens and snaps back naturally, I feel calm and serene like never before. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, this is good experience. Basically, our minds are used to latch on something, used to attach to something. So that is why actually we are continuously going on in this samsara. So when our eyes are attached to say different sights, and once we lose it, then we are attached to some sounds coming through ears. And when that loosen, then we are attached to something coming through our nose. So likewise, especially the five senses are continuously occupy the mind. And if not anything is coming through them, then we are occupying something available in the mind itself. So likewise, we are always latching on to something and continuing our way of say thinking, we can say. But as you have mentioned, there are rare occasions because of the mindfulness practice that we might feel that there is nothing to depend on, or there is nothing to hold on, there is nothing to grasp. Then mind can become empty. So at the beginning it happens only momentarily, so we don't feel much, but it's kind of a little bit of a say lightning kind of thing we can experience. Lightning in the sense, I mean, kind of a difference. Different mind experience can happen, but not frequently. But as we continue our practice, it starts to happen frequently. So that is the important thing. So it is not that, it is not happening. It can happen frequently, but with time. So it's a matter of continuing our practice. So again and again, then you may come across this situation, and then you don't need to worry. I mean, worry in the sense, I mean, when it happens only very rarely, then we are aspiring to that. We are having too much expectations on that. That keeping such expectations itself can become a burden. So therefore, you don't need to do that. Rather, it's a matter of continuing your practice and maintaining your practice, then as you are maturing, then you are definitely experiencing these things more and more. I feel that you are in the correct path. So don't worry. I mean, it's a matter of continuing the practice. Then slowly we may be able to experience that kind of unattached or non-grasping states of mind frequently. Then it's a matter of further and further enhancing those states. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 6. This is a theory question. Dear Bhante, what does it mean by pranidhi in relation to apanidha? Yeah. Should I type it in?
Yeah. Can you repeat the question, Chatu? Yeah. I am experiencing some weak in the internet connection.
Yeah, what does it mean by pranidhi in relation to apanidha?
Yeah. So actually, panidhi, the Pali term panidhi actually refers different types of wishes. So we all have different hopes, wishes, desires. So panidhi is something like that. So we are always desiring something. So I want to become someone, I want to have something. So likewise, we have different plans, we have different hopes, wishes. So that all represents this panidhi. And when someone is experiencing impermanent suffering and non-self, so especially when his mind is more attuned towards the unsatisfactoriness or the suffering nature, the dukkha nature, then he will understand, I mean, even if I get more things, even if I have so many things, still it is going to be sort of unsatisfactory. So because these conditioned phenomena can never give us full satisfaction, because they are so vulnerable, so impermanent, and they are out of our control. So we can't expect lasting happiness from any of these impermanent things. So that is what one will understand. So when that understanding is further developing, then mind starts to let go of those things. Letting go of those things and not desiring anything anymore. So not desiring. Not desiring. Not desiring is actually defined as the appanihita. So that is the second type of, we can say the type of opening happens in the mind. So rather than grasping again and again one after the other, now the mind is understanding, okay, there is no point of grasping, there is no point of desiring things, there is no point of wishing things, because it is not providing me any lasting happiness, lasting satisfaction. So let me relinquish everything, not desiring anything. So this is what is called the appanihita vimokkha, or kind of the opening that one may experience through not desiring, through relinquishment, through wishing, not wishing anything. So this is the meaning of the appanihita. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 6, theory question. Dear Bhante, thank you so much for sharing about Venerable Saul Parker on the last session. It was an eye-opener and amazing. Thank you so much, and may you get many more merits. Now I am very keen to read Eka Nama Kim Sutraya. Would you please direct me where I can find this in the Pitaka? Greatly appreciate, and much merits as always. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I'll try to find it out. Eka Nama Kim Sutta. So Eka Nama. So you, I think this you are referring the what this Sopaka's thing. So that is the first question asked by the Buddha from Venerable Sopaka. So I can't remember whether there is such a sutta available. But there is a sutta talking about a particular monk who is trying to live a very secluded life. So that is a different sutta. But I think you are referring Ekanama King Sutta, which I am not sure such sutta is available. So I need to find it out.
Question number. Actually, I think there's a clarification on that question. It says 10 questions. Does that make any sense?
Yes. That's right. So this, referred to Venerable Sopaka, Buddha actually asked 10 questions. Starting with Ekanamaking, that is what is the one, and then he's asking Dvenamaking, what is two. So likewise, Buddha is referring 10 questions from Venerable Sopaka, and I'll try to find it out. Yeah, next time maybe I can tell you, or I can send an email to the organizers. Then probably they may send it to you.
Okay, thank you. Question number 5 of 6. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, thank you for the valuable Dhamma talk. I have a question about wealth. How should one go about letting go of wealth if they are in charge of a modern Sydney mortgage and co-joined family property? I have to keep working to pay off the debt and help family. I feel that I should apply for a promotion at work to earn more and live comfortably with the debt. It is a cycle I am aware of. I am trying to manage the stress, as I know I may lose the property at any time because life is uncertain anyway. Maybe in the future I can sell and downsize the property, but we are not at the stage of getting a profit from selling yet. What is your advice for the meantime for letting go of wealth generally? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, it is not that we are sort of say relinquishing everything and become a beggar. That is not the sort of the advice. Rather, how about not making a burden of what we have? If possible, if we can do something like that, say there are only the essential things that I am having. At the same time, I am not holding them again and again in them in my mind. So I can understand a mechanism how to keep them aside. Rather than holding things, remembering things, always thinking about them, and sort of having a possessive feeling about so many things. So that actually make the mind quite stressful. So is it possible to maintain wealth without making the mind stressful? So that is something that we have to search actually. That is something that we have to practice. So there should be a kind of a spiritual path. So it is not that we are relinquishing everything and sort of we become, the whole world become monks. That is not the message. Rather, is there any way that we can avoid making our mind always burdened, always stressful, tensed with so many things? Are we maintaining only the essential things, or are we maintaining unnecessary things as well? So are we trying to possess only the essential things, necessary things, or are we simply following our desires and trying to accumulate so many things? So what is the limit to our desires? So what is our real capacity? What is our practical, say, necessity, what we have? So these are the things that in a way we can think in line with the Dhamma. So because our desires sometimes fool us, always asking this and that. So there is no end to those desires. I mean, we can never satisfy all the desires. So that is where we have to, say, think rationally. So what am I doing? I mean, is it necessary? So what this mind is asking, is it really necessary? Am I able to, I mean, continue my life without this? So likewise, if we can think only have the essential items, then we can have a simple life. Nowadays, actually, we are having so many things. That is why actually ultimately we become burdened. Liabilities and mortgages and this and that. So that is the difficulty in our life. But if we consider kind of a life which is no debts at all and still have enough money to run the family, and have some time to develop some spiritual aspects, and living a kind of a, say, cordial relationship among the family members. So if we can think in that angle also, then we understand it is not the primary goal of our life is not really the accumulating of so much of wealth. Wealth is just one aspect, but there are so many other things that we can think of which actually make our lives so beautiful. Say the peace among the family members, the unity among the family members, the kind of the relationship that we are maintaining with our friends or with our family members. So such kind of beautiful things actually add some value to our life, and it is not only the wealth that we can think of, and that is the message that actually we can gain through the verse or the today's story. Yeah, back to you, Chatu.
Question number 6. This is the last one. Mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, when I'm doing sitting practice, most things come to mind. Most things that come to the mind are things I need to do. After sitting, I notice there is no end to to-do work. In fact, it's like a never-ending list as long as you live. Bhante, would you please be able to give some advice on how to not get distracted by those? By the way, I have written the to-do and list and kept aside. What I want is to disconnect it from mind. Much merits and appreciation with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, as you have said, actually, things are always there. There are so many responsibilities. There are so many things to do, but we can't complete everything. But we are not neglecting them either. But we can recognize what is essential and what are the really necessary things to do, and what are the things that we have unnecessarily get involved. So these are the things that actually we can think mindfully, because of our desires, excessive desires that we probably have put our hand to unnecessary areas, unnecessary things, so that we can recognize and get back our head. So we don't know, those are not really my responsibilities. So likewise, actually, we can see what are the essential things which I have to fulfill in this life, and what are the things that which I have unnecessarily making as a kind of a burden to myself. So that sort of an assessment, if we can do in our life, then probably we can reduce the burden. We can fulfill only the necessary things. Then I feel that the life becomes somewhat manageable, easy to handle. Now that is my sort of understanding or the view that I have. So going on. Didn't hear, Chatu? So you are muted.
Sorry, I thought you finished the question. Sorry.
Okay, fine. Yes, now finished.
Bante, that's the last of the questions.
Okay.
We will end early today because also you're not in a different location as well. So with that, I'd like to conclude the session. I'd like to first thank Bante and pass on our merits for all this valuable advice that we've received, and also to the people seen and unseen working to make this this session happen, and lastly to the participants, because without you there would be no program. With that, I'd like to end. Teruan Sarnai.
Teruan Sarnai.